Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Friday, June 12th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Newburyport Council on Aging, Petitions Drafted to Save Position by Matt Petrie. Newburyport. More local groups have created petitions to save the Council on Aging's outreach specialist position, as it faces possible elimination if the city's fiscal 2027 budget is approved as proposed. Last week, staff and patrons of the St. Basil's Lunch Program, an Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church of Newburyport, signed a petition with copies dropped off in city councilor mailboxes at City Hall. Since then, three more groups, the Among Friends Meals Program at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church Meals Program, and seniors at the Newburyport Senior Community Center, have joined in using the original petition as a template. The petitions read that they have seen firsthand the work of the position and question whether those responsibilities could be shifted to another employee. This cut will be detrimental to the Council on Aging and should be restored, the petitions read in part. They come as current COA Outreach Specialist Anne Freeman's position is on the chopping block in the proposed fiscal 2027 budget. Freeman receives a salary of $58,137. An outreach specialist connects with organization with its community, target audience, or stakeholders. Should the budget be approved in its current form, the COA would see a $36,168 cut, but its staff would receive raises ranging between just over $1,000 and just under $7,000. The proposed general fund expenditures in fiscal 2027 budget are $93.5 million, a $3.8 million, 4.24% increase over the revised fiscal 2026 budget expenditures of $89.7 million. The total projected general fund revenue is $95,941,849, with projected enterprise funds of $15,815,847, resulting in a total fiscal 2027 budget of $111,756,696. John Housiotnidis of St. Basil's said while he has the utmost respect for Mayor John Reardon, who submitted the proposed budget last month, he does not agree with eliminating the outreach position. Having seen what Freeman means to the community, Housiotnidis said the city cannot afford to lose her. We hear from seniors the outreach that she does, going to people's homes, bringing rollators and walkers to people's homes, well beyond her work hours, Housiotnidis said. And there's just a compassion and love for the seniors that she has and felt that something should be done to notify the mayor and the city council that this is a wrong move. A recently retired Among Friends meal director, Bonnie Schultz, also praised Freeman. She would come to our program not to eat lunch, but to meet our guests and get to know them, Schultz said. Pointing to the city's budget book, Housiotnidis said cutting the position flies in the face of how important the role is described by the city. So just seeing that this goes against the grain of what the director here has put and the mayor has put in the section that deals with the Council on Aging, that they're actually cutting it, Housiotnidis said. The budget book can be found on the city's website. Reardon said the decision was not made lightly. We recognize the important work that role has provided to our senior community, Reardon said. As part of this transition, we are restructuring the Recreation and Youth Services, RYS, social worker position to formally include dedicated time serving seniors at the Council on Aging. Reardon added that the RYS staff member has already been working in that capacity. By integrating those responsibilities into the position on a permanent basis, we believe we can maintain and in some areas enhance the level of support and resources available to Newburyport's older adults while continuing to meet the needs of residents across generations, Reardon said. Officials celebrate Larkin Dam's removal by Dave Rogers, Newbury. Local and state officials gathered Thursday where the Larkin Dam had once restricted the Parker River to celebrate its removal after several years of effort. Since 2022, state, federal, town, and nonprofit partners invested $1,834,735 to remove the aging structure and restore the river. The project, completed about 6 months ago, was part of a decades-long effort to restore the Parker River and marks a major milestone for river health, public safety, and climate resilience, reconnecting more than a mile of upstream habitat for migratory and resident fish, while reducing flood risk, according to officials. Projects like the Larkin Dam removal remind us that conservation is often most successful when communities, agencies, and nonprofit partners work together toward a common goal, said Newbury Conservation Agent Mason Ferrick. The ecological benefits of restoring a free-flowing river will be felt for generations. And we hope this project encourages other communities to explore opportunities to remove obsolete barriers and reconnect critical habitat. The town, which owned the dam, had long recognized the structure was slowly deteriorating, and it was a barrier to migratory fish passage. Removal of the dam restores access to nearly 8 river miles and over 120 acres of habitat for migratory fish, including river herring, sea lamprey, American eel, and sea run brook trout. Migratory fish rely on free-flowing rivers to complete their life cycle. Moving between the ocean and freshwater rivers and streams to reproduce. While the previous dam had a fish ladder, it was old and ineffective, limiting passage of fish during their migration. The project also restored natural processes of the river, improved water quality, and reduced local flood risks by eliminating an obsolete structure that had long constrained the river, according to state officials. Restoring free-flowing rivers is one of the most effective actions we can take to strengthen biodiversity and climate resilience in Massachusetts, said Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Tom O'Shea. By removing the Larkin Dam, we are reopening habitat for native fish, revitalizing the Parker River ecosystem, and advancing the Commonwealth's commitment to safeguarding fish and wildlife and habitats they depend upon, he added. This project shows what is possible when partners come together to let rivers be rivers again. The celebration Thursday brought together project partners including the town, the Massachusetts Division of Ecological Restoration, the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries, the Ipswich River Watershed Association, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Officials cut a ceremonial ribbon and provided guided walks to view the newly restored river channel. The project reflects years of planning, engineering, and partnership among local, state, federal, and nonprofit organizations. In addition to removing the dam, they have planted thousands of native shrubs and trees to stabilize the riverbanks, improve habitat, and support long-term ecological recovery. With the dam removed and the section of the river flowing freely for the first time in more than a century, the Parker River is already showing signs of recovery. Native vegetation is taking hold, sediment is moving naturally through the system, and fish are returning upstream habitat, according to state officials. Dam removal is a powerful tool for river and habitat stewardship, and the elimination of the Larkin Dam is a prime example of the effective use of that tool, said Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr, Republican from Gloucester. The removal project enhanced fish habitat, increased spawning potential, improved public safety, and will support flood control. All of these benefits are important, and all have been secured with the action taken to dismantle the dam. In the Spirit, by the Reverend Christopher Ney, a summer for celebration, reflection, and renewed commitment. This summer will be a season for celebration and reflection on our national history as we approach the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence in July. Remembering the events of 1776 invites us to consider the vision that inspired the gathering in Philadelphia, what remains to build a more perfect union. The work of reflection on our identity and values is an especially important task in this moment of polarization, when many issues are deeply contested. Amid the fierce debates, a few additional historical moments this summer may serve as guides. A few days after this is published, we recognize Juneteenth, that day that commemorates the liberation of enslaved people in Texas at the time of the Civil War. Also, we celebrate Pride during June, honoring inclusion and safety for LGBTQIA people and the anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion. Later in July, we mark the anniversary of the Seneca Falls Convention of 1848. That strengthened the work of freedom and equality by supporting women's rights, suffrages, and the abolition of slavery. These events and many others give us different ways of seeing our history and understanding ourselves. Remembering all of these histories during this summer's anniversaries may help us find ourselves amid the contours of our rich and complex history, because any historical reflection encourages us to consider more than where we have been. History invites us to ask who we are and where we are going. These questions are also deeply religious. At this time, when religious nationalism is trying to impose the idea that there is only one way of being religious, it is important to remember that there are many ways of being faithful, and honoring that diversity is one of our core national values. People of diverse faith backgrounds have shaped our national identity. Many of the most significant moments in our history have happened when people of faith have acted according to the highest ideals of their tradition. In those moments, faith is not something that is imposed on others, but an act that inspires others to live according to an ethic of mutual care and community, protecting the vulnerable and honoring all people as children of God. One of the figures that I look to for inspiration is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and I believe his words speak to us in this moment. A few months before his death, Dr. King preached to his home congregation at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. Among friends and family, he reflected on his life and how he wanted to be remembered. The sermon is called The Drum Major Instinct, a description of the human tendency to seek attention and admiration. In the sermon, Dr. King gave a new definition of greatness, one that can serve as a guide for all people. He said, if you want to be great, wonderful, but realize that who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That is the new definition of greatness. By giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. Dr. King concluded, you only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love, and you can be that servant. This is a summer for celebration and reflection by serving and caring for one another. The Reverend Dr. Christopher Ney is the pastor of Central Congregational Church and is blessed with a sabbatical this summer for rest and renewal. Aces by Thomas Rich. Rubbish to the Runway. Editor's note. This is one in a series of educational columns fostering environmental stewardship and leadership, coordinated by ACES, the Alliance of Climate and Environmental Stewards. Fast fashion produces 92 million tons of textile waste annually. It accounts for roughly 10% of the annual carbon emissions. For those who are unfamiliar with the term, and count yourself lucky if this is the case, fast fashion is the rapid design and manufacturing of clothing in order to maximize output. Traditionally, clothing design has not been a fast process. New styles came and went, but at a pace that manufacturers could keep up with. However, the introduction of fast fashion has completely turned the cycle upside down. New styles rotate on a weekly basis, and each company fights for space in the rapidly changing industry by offering hundreds, if not thousands, of different garments for the customers to pick from at any given time. But as the old adage says, of the three measures of a product, fast, cheap, and well-made, you can only ever have two. Fast fashion chooses to capitalize on the first two and entirely neglects the third. After all, no one is going to care that their shirt, which arrived on Monday, is falling apart by Friday if there is a new package waiting on their doorstep. The most worrisome part is how well this business model works. Each major world economy seems to have adopted its own brand to occupy the growing industry. Spain has Zara. China has Shine. Sweden has H&M. Japan has Uniqlo. Ireland has Primark. And don't think that the U.S. is exempt from that list. Instead of producing the clothes, we buy them. The U.S. is the number one consumer of clothing in the world by volume, with each American buying an average of 53 new items each year. And while the production of these textiles is terrible for the environment, in and of itself, ACES's focus this week is on what happens to that shirt that is falling apart by Friday. Most traditional clothing, which is made with materials that are harvested from natural sources, for example, cotton, linen, wool, leather, silk, and therefore can be returned to the earth easily when it has been thoroughly used. When clothes are made from high-quality materials, this should be quite a while. On the other hand, to maximize efficiency and keep the prices low, fast fashion uses synthetic materials, for example, polyester, nylon, acrylic, which harm the earth in the same way that plastic does when it is put in a landfill or winds up in the ocean. In 2022, Massachusetts banned textiles from being disposed, so many opt to donate what they no longer want to thrift stores. Thrifting, a growing market especially among younger generations, is a great way to mix up your wardrobe while causing minimal environmental impact. But the thrift cycle relies on goods of high enough quality that they can transition between multiple owners and retain their use. Since Americans consume copious amounts of clothing each year and throwing it away is illegal in the Bay State, despite much of it not lasting, this raises the question, where does all of this fabric end up? There is no definitive answer, although it is assumed that much of it ends up harming the environment in one way or another. Some of it is shipped overseas and then dumped because it is too decrepit to be resold, and some is simply burned. In Groveland, there appears to be a solution. VZ Park is hosting its annual Rubbish to Runway fashion show at the end of the month, and expectations are high for this year's designs. On the evenings of June 26th to 27th, models will strut down the runway wearing novel outfits made from reclaimed and recycled materials. Previous outfits include ball gowns created from produce bags and tracksuits made from camping tents. Proceeds from ticket sales go toward offering free and affordable community events and developing innovative arts programs that cater to diverse age groups and skill levels at VZ Memorial Park. Additionally, this event brings community members and together and raises awareness for sustainable fashion choices. With creative community efforts like this, we have the opportunity to combat harmful effects of fast fashion. If you are interested in learning more about Rubbish to Runway, visit vzpark.org. Tickets are almost sold out, so make sure to get them while you still can. Thomas Rich, a junior at Newburyport High School, is an ACES director. He is also the website coordinator for ACES. We invite you to stay updated on environmental matters by subscribing to our monthly newsletter on ACES's website. Please consider joining our community of stewards committing to making every day Earth Day and follow our Instagram and Facebook pages. TGIF. What's up this weekend? How does your garden grow? Celebrating 250 years of growth, the 47th annual Old Newbury Garden Tour takes place this weekend. Explore stunning gardens in Newburyport and Amesbury on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tickets are $25 for members and $40 for non-members. For more information, visit https://www.newburyhistory.org/calendar. Read your favorite poem. The 24th Annual Greater Newburyport Favorite Poem Project takes place Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Newburyport Senior Community Center at 331 High Street, Newburyport. This event will feature a variety of locals presenting poems that have affected their lives in under 3 minutes each. If you are looking for an uplifting 90 minutes, here is your free ticket. Heinz 5K returns. Newburyport's Cashman Park will once again be filled with runners Saturday at 4 p.m. during the 14th annual Flag Day 5K road race to support the 1st Lieutenant Derek Hines Soldiers Assistance Fund. Come cheer on the hundreds of runners expected to compete in the beloved Newburyport tradition. Let's go outside. The Parker River National Wildlife Refuge is hosting its annual Free Nature Festival Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the refuge. Learn to fish, meet tide pool critters, make crafts, go on a birding walker, and even see the sun through the solar scopes. Parking at Lot 1 and the Refuge Center Visitor Center with a free shuttle in between. Visit the Dark Side. John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band will rock Salisbury's Blue Ocean Music Hall on Saturday at 8 p.m. Breaking out in the 1980s thanks to the movie Eddie and the Cruisers. The band has been entertaining rock fans for more than 40 years. For more information and tickets, visit https://www.blueoceanhall.com. Pedal to the metal. Hot rod lovers, rejoice. Cars and Coffee is back for another season in the Port Plaza parking lot near Shaw's in Newburyport on Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. The weekly gathering of area gearheads has returned for its 10th season. All the fun is free and open to anyone. Everyone cross your fingers for dry weather. Pink House Art Market at NAA, Newburyport. Newburyport Art is dedicating its first of the summer art market pop-up to the Pink House, the beloved historical cultural icon that was demolished last year. As it endures being an artistic influence and inspiration, the gallery at 65 Water Street will celebrate Pink House Day on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. with those devoted to creating memories through art. 9 artists will sell their own original Pink House artwork in the sculpture garden, including Allison Odell, Jerry Kent, Heather Corbett Ortiz, Janet Bornman, Callan Lavallee, Kathy Culvert, Laureen Mayer, Liza Linehan, and Peter Neverett. This event is organized by Kelly Page, NAA staff and board member of the former Support the Pink House. Pink House artwork can also be found in the summer gift shop through August 22nd by artists Barry Berman and Bonita LeFleur, while NAA poet in residence John Burciaga's Ode to the Pink House poem will be displayed in the Sargent Gallery. The Summer Art Market series on Sundays, the Sculpture Garden will continue on July 12th, August 9th, and September 13th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Open Wednesday through Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. NAA is handicap accessible. More information as well as online gallery is available at newburyportart.org. The gallery and events are free and open to the public. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.